We are rocking and rolling on the Monday afternoon show. We have Garrett Roach in the house. He brought in a very dear guest and listener of the radio at times, David Linter and Carrie Linter here from Hudson. David is going to talk about several things, one of which is the meaning of Memorial Day for him, being a Vietnam War veteran. I would like to say welcome to the show, Garrett Roach. Are you really here? He's on the phone. He's trying to actually get a guest from County Kerry. Word has it that Robert O'Brien may be on the line and available if we keep trying, from County Kerry, and his wonderful, beautiful daughter, Princess, will be singing us a few nursery rhymes if all goes well. But until that day, until that moment, rather, we're going to go in and say hi to Garrett, and why don't you just introduce your guests and tell us how you're doing.
You bet I'm here.
Oh, wait, hold on a second. I got to put your microphone on.
Oh. You bet I'm here, oh, Mr. Kieran. Many thanks. And have my dear, dear friends in studio here with me, Mr. David and his lovely wife, Carrie Linter. And I would like to give a shout out to Carrie's dad, Mr. Alan Goldberger, who is 91, 92 today. Ooh. Excuse me. That's right. He was 91. 92 today. And it is amazing because this is also the birth date of my great-granddad, John Joseph, also known as Jack Roach of Knocknagashal, County Kerry, Ireland. So I'm also attributing this show and dedicating this show, this segment of the broadcast, rather, of your show, Kieran, to both Mr. and Mrs. Linter here and my great-granddad, Jack Roach. He entered this country undocumented. He did not come through Ellis Island. This was in the early 1900s because he was compelled to join a very, very small organization in Ireland known as the Moonlighters, who would meet at the Rising of the Moon. And I have planned, if you will, Kieran, to play the song The Rising of the Moon by the Clancy Brothers. I have the CD with me.
Great.
Because they would gather at the Rising of the Moon with strategies to fight the evictions of the tyrannical landlords of the time. There was an altercation with a landlord named Arthur Herbert in Knocknagashal. And my great-granddad joined the Moonlighters when he was 12. He was born in 1872 and passed away in 1963. My mother said there was never a man like him and never will be except for me. He passed away in early June 1963, just shy of my mom's ninth birthday, but he made a lasting impression on her. She was even closer to him in a way than to her own father. And the stories that were handed down were absolutely amazing and astonishing. And he found himself in the South Bronx one day. He escaped on a cargo ship in the middle of the night. He hid in a potato sack. And when the guards came looking for him on the ship, someone luckily covered for him. So it's just an example of the man he was. He also fought his own fight. The main reason he had to leave Ireland was he was a very different situation from most. And his family were travelers who had settled in Knocknagashal and took their stake. They squatted on land there. They built their own cottages. And then eventually, you know, there's this other uprising, and they try and pit people against each other religiously, government-wise. The whole plan, my mother and I over the years, and she since passed as of May 20th, 2015, but she's with me all the way now, stronger than ever. We put two and two together, combining history of our own heritage with how the world is today. And down through the centuries, the whole plan has been between religions pitting people against each other and governments pitting people against each other, is to get them to fight more for what flag they're under or what government they're under or what religion they want to be, rather than fighting to take their land back. You know, you had people coming in left and right, this person, that person, this entity, that entity, taking over the land. and then they use smoke and mirrors to distract people. The ultimate goal is to not have positivity amongst the masses. So this is carried down in a different form in this day and age in which we live, amongst many different peoples. But his daughter, my grandmother, faced discrimination when they arrived in the South Bronx. Eventually, they moved out to Long Island. And my great-granddad's daughter, went into a shop for her first time to purchase some candy from a little newspaper stand candy shop in the South Bronx. And she's 5 years old. She put her nickel up on the counter and she was spat in the face and told, get out of my store, you dirty Irish. And the shopkeeper did not know my great granddad was waiting outside the shop at the time. So he went in and let's just say my great granddad spoke his piece and the shop closed down a week later.
He wasn't carrying a shillelagh by chance? Just a wee bit of the shillelagh sometimes executes a bit of justice.
I'd say it was his fist and or a shillelagh.
Okay. That's amazing story right
that's
there.
That's just in a nutshell. I mean, I can go on many more, but I'm not going to hold up my...
So your great-granddad...
Dearest friend here.
Let's go ahead once again, Garrett. The show is dedicated, this portion of the show right here, with Garrett Roach, who's in the studio with David and Carrie Linter, is being dedicated to... the great-granddad from County Kerry, of all places. All right. And your great-grandfather's name, once again, Joseph Jack
John
Roach.
John Joseph. Jack Roach.
Or Jack Roach.
Is that one punch?
County
Kerry. He fought his own fight, too. He fought for... you have people who did not want to do any fighting. What these wars are about throughout history... what they're really against are the power trip over people who just want to continue and live their lives happily and get up every morning and celebrate the day and feed their families. And then they get a muck and mire. They get all sorts of people caught up in the middle and all sorts of confusion going, which is the name of the game. But the main reason he had to leave Ireland was more than the monarchy, more than the British, more than the religious entity, so to speak, although they were a big part of it as well, the hierarchies, were the traitors, were the including amongst the moonlighters themselves. So that's the main reason, because he realized that about them. My mom remembers him talking about this. I mean, he even said back then, the only trouble with Ireland is the people that are in it. And... it was because you had one side pitting against another. And the original persecution was against the Tinkers, or now known today as the Irish Traveling People. And it all trickled down from there.
So we were just talking about the Tinkers last night with some friends of mine. As a matter of fact, I was up in Northampton, Massachusetts. And the Tinkers come from... having to do with tin. They worked with tin.
Absolutely. Making, mending pots and pans.
Yeah. And the tin actually goes way back thousands of years to when the Irish were trading, the ancient Celts, I should say, were trading with the Phoenicians. This goes back in ancient folklore. They had tin to trade with the Phoenicians. And
even before that, because the travelers are considered a pre-Celtic people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the history goes on and on and on. It's absolutely fascinating. And unfortunately, the wars go on and on and on. And we keep trying to just get to that next level where war is averted. We were also talking, interestingly enough, lacrosse. Now, I'm going to not go into this one, but there was a NCAA college lacrosse final today between Duke versus Yale. It's a whole thing, but it's a Native American sport that was actually established for the purpose of avoiding and averting war. The name of lacrosse in the ancient Native American language translates roughly to the little brother to war, and they played it ceremonially over a period of days in which the young warriors could get their young male aggression out and beat the crap out of each other, and every now and then a warrior would even die. We're talking like 18-year-olds with vendettas. You stole my girlfriend last year, I'm going to hit you over the head, and they're in a lacrosse game. But it was a way that the tribes didn't have to actually go to war over petty bull, you know, petty stuff that young men and sometimes even older men decide they're going to go to war and use their entire tribe or nation to go against each other for absolutely nothing. And it worked.
I think nature has a way of culling the herd. Nature has a way of culling the herd in all sorts of different fashions.
Yeah.
Including our human nature, which of course part of which is to war and fight. And I think it's just repeated in so many ways metaphorically every day. I mean, business is set up so that people theoretically don't kill each other, that they negotiate and they work it out, right? Sports, all sports, football, basketball, all the ones I love. You know, they're just a replacement for people not killing each other, literally.
Well, that's what certainly they've been trying. That's the other thing we talked about is the Olympics originally. The original international sports was the Olympics, in which it would be a time of peace for all nations. They had to temporarily stop war. These athletes would travel to Athens or wherever the Olympics were held, and it continued. It was supposed to be a way to rise above warfare. And what's happening in the United States today with professional sports, and we noticed it, we've been noticing it since September 11th, 2001, where the military-industrial complex has co-opted professional sports and used it as a platform for propaganda and to actually use sports as sort of a way to further the American agenda. It's like, yeah, we got the NFL behind us. They do flyovers. The Marine Corps is always there. The national anthem's now played even better than ever, and it's really interesting to see how the Pentagon has actually put a portion of their budget towards maintaining a presence at professional sports events. It's pretty amazing how they sort of twisted that one around, because originally it's to avoid it. So David, this is David Linter. I should introduce him again. Thank you, Garrett, for bringing David on. David,
welcome
to the Monday Afternoon Show. You have called in before, but I don't think you've ever actually been able to come right up to that microphone, and here you are on Memorial Day. You're a Vietnam veteran, and it is a great honor to have you in the studio. Thank you for being here.
First and foremost, I want to just say love and respect to all those who fought. And after that, from there, I'll never make it through my any kind of Vietnam story. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, no need to relive that one.
Nah, it's just, I never get through it. I'll be blubbering along and everybody will be turning the thing off. It'll be horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, like for one, I'd like to give a shout out to another Vietnam vet, dedicated Walgreens customer, Charlie Rogers, a man who shoots from the hip and has a heart of gold at the same time. And he's listening right now. He informed me little while before I came on the broadcast that he was, and he's most interested in hearing David here. Therefore, more brothers in arms. But I just cannot believe that we have Memorial Day coinciding with my great-granddad's birthday and Carrie's dad's birthday. Who was a vet as well. World War II. And I'd like to allow David to go on about his story here, what Vietnam led up to for him, all the way up to 2008 when he found himself in the Chelsea Hotel and had an interesting episode there that's a bewilderment as to how he's still here with us today. So he would like to talk about that as well as his film he has currently going into production in Hollywood. Called Treat, about the life of a Samoan gangster on the streets of L.A. named Trevelyan. And also, as Kieran had so kindly given the listeners a heads up about, Mr. Robert O'Brien, one of the best of the best, and his four-year-old daughter, Princess, were going to come on. Princess was going to sing a nursery rhyme. Unfortunately, I'm not sure why I'm unable to get a hold of Robert.
We're going to just keep trying.
They may have been just delayed with something simple. I hope he's all right. But if I cannot reach them, I'm going to sing the nursery rhyme to everyone myself. So there, not held wondering any longer.
So, Robert O'Brien, if you are listening in and Princess is ready to call, just hold off for a bit longer and pretend like you can't call in, because I want to hear Garrett sing the nursery rhyme and then call, and Princess can do it too. Because this is just a wonderful opportunity to have you sing on the show.
You're ready now?
Let's do it.
All right. Here we go. I know Robert and Princess will be more than proud, too. I'll sing one, the main one she was going to sing, and then she can sing some of the others, or maybe sing this one herself, too, when she's ready and able to come on. Here we go, everyone. My boyfriend gave me apples. My boyfriend gave me pears. My boyfriend gave me and kicked me down the stairs. He kicked me over London. He kicked me over France. He kicked me over the USA and in the galdi pants. Woo! That's it,
yay,
my friend.
Yay!
Thank you.
Garrett
thank
Roach
you.
On the mic, ladies and gentlemen. That is a first for the Monday afternoon show. Okay. So,
when
here
they were
we are.
Here in December, we were singing that with Princess on the way down to Rockefeller Center in Times Square on the Amtrak from Hudson.
Good
but,
stuff.
But let's have Mr. David go on here. Let it rip. Let it rip, brother.
Garrett wanted me to spend some time talking about my life at the Hotel Chelsea, where I lived for about 17 years. I can't say I was there during the factory and Andy Warhol heyday, but I was there at the end. In fact, I like to credit myself with holding the last salon of weirdos, you know, who used to congregate in the lobby. And we just sit around and shoot the breeze about everything. And you had all kinds of, you had painters and writers and whatever, lawyers, doctors. It was really, that's what made the place really so remarkable, in my opinion. The tolerance people had for whatever you did. You couldn't be too weird. It wasn't possible. Everybody was like, cool. This is the place you come. If you feel like you don't belong, you come live at the Chelsea. It was like a Jewish dysfunctional family run by Stanley Bard, one of the legendary characters of New York City, who just loved artists. And he did so many amazing things. He let me go. I went like a year without paying the rent. One year. Literally. I said, Stanley, I promise I'll get it. I got it like on the 31st, I swear. I finally got paid for something, and I gave him his rent.
The 31st of December?
December, yeah. I mean, it's stuff like that. I mean, the first time I walked in there, I had been living in Paris, working, writing, whatever. And when I came home, I really didn't have anywhere to go. So I went to L.A., bummed $5,000 off my brother, and said, gee, I'm going back to New York. I don't know where I'm going. Now, of course, I know of the Chelsea lore, and that's really not what drove me there. It was just, you know, it was how cheap it was, of course. And it took me like 3 weeks to realize that people were living there, you know, with like leases and things like that. Meanwhile, I'm like a dope I'm paying every day. But I figured it out, and I finally said, I went to Stanley. I said, hey, can I move in? He said, yeah, what do you do? I said, I'm a writer. You got enough of those, but if you got room for one more, novelist, working in film as well. He said, all right. And I swear to you, this is bare hyperbole. The lease was like on a piece of toilet paper that had been left on the floor. And he picked up the thing. He said, here's the lease. He wrote it out. I have no idea what it said. The price was right, whatever it was. And that's how I moved in. And I never, you hear this from so many people who have lived there. You know, they moved in for a day, a week, 2 weeks, and they ended up 20, 30 years. It was a magical place. It just had one of those, you know, it's like you could see you can almost feel the thing coming down from the heavens that had created this spot you know, for people who were outcasts. And we had all kinds of different ones. We had a guy who dressed like an angel every day. I mean, with the wings, the whole bit.
Nice.
I mean, he was incredible.
There you go.
Never said a word to him. One day he flew away. Nobody knew it. What happened to the angel?
He had work to do.
Yeah.
Lots.
He sure did. I mean, so, I mean, it was stuff like that. The first day I walked in, some guy was pissing in the, what do they call it? Where the smoke goes up.
The chimney flue?
The,
smokestack?
No. You know, where you put the wood and,
fireplace?
Old timer's disease.
In the fireplace?
Yeah. You know, exactly.
Basically where he shouldn't be.
Exactly. I walk in, I see this guy, he's pissing in there. There's like, long before LGBG, et cetera, there were, you know, the place was filled with them in the lobby with, you know, different kinds of people. And I walked in there, it was the first time in my life that I said, wow, I feel like I'm home. And I'd been living, you know, many different places in Europe, around the country, and I said, this is for me. And it was, primarily because I knew I could keep to myself, I could do what I do. You know, I'm no showman like many people there. I mean, this is a place where Arthur C. Clarke wrote 2001 A Space Odyssey, for instance. Arthur Miller lived there. Marilyn Monroe would come visit him regularly. I mean, Mark Twain lived there. I mean, this is the history of that hotel. And it's in there. You can feel it. It's, at least you used to. Now it's been, of course, turned into a horrible... What are those? Boutique hotels. I can't let myself drive by it. It just kills me. You know, Brendan Bee and all these guys, they all live there. In fact, Dylan Thomas, you know, had his last drink around the corner before, you know, he dropped dead. And he was living at the Chelsea at the time. I mean, the history of the place is just outrageous.
Sounds like an adventure. Sounds like a party. Sounds like you have lots more stories that you could definitely be sharing with us. We got a break for station identification and some news real quick. Right there. Okay, we're still here with Garrett Roach, dedicating things to his great-grandfather from County Kerry, trying to get on the line with Robert O'Brien and his daughter Princess from County Kerry. We'll see how that goes. Armando and Catherine Ayers are, who knows, waiting in the wings to possibly contribute in and call in. And we still have David Linter in the house. He wants to talk about stuff that went down at the Chelsea Hotel.
Big
Manhattan.
Time. And two quick shout-outs, if you don't mind, Kieran. To Rob and Steve of the new clothing shop / cafe. They're about two steps down from David and Carrie here, Hudson Mainstay. And they're already an outstanding business.
Really cool people.
Okay.
Yes. And David and Carrie told me first of it, and I just went in and met the one gentleman, Steve, today. Rob, the owner, had already left for the day, but it looks like it's another, another jolt of positivity and great vibes for Hudson. They seem like an outstanding crew already. And also a shout-out to meteorologist Steve Caparizzo of News 10 Albany, who I met for the second time in person at the Columbia Green Humane Society the other day.
Whoa!
And he says he will more than likely be able to join us on a future broadcast.
Bring the meteorologist on. I want to grill that guy. I got some questions, and I'm not going to let up. I want to know what the weather's going to be like tomorrow.
Plus, he runs...
And I don't want any lies.
Go easy, buddy.
Not from him. He's more accurate than many. Plus, he has the pet connection where he promotes particular pets from certain kennels. He'll come on the television and have the dog or the cat right there with him. And he signed his last photo he had on him, autographed it to a customer named Mary Jane of Walgreens, an elderly lady
Stop
who obtained
it.
Her calico cat.
Did you just say
Ms.
Mary
Sylvia.
Jane?
Mary Jane.
That's a great name.
And I gave her the photo yesterday when she came in, and she started to cry because she had told me he was going to be at the Columbia Green Humane, but she never expected me to show up with a photo for her, especially since her day. She had been having a bad day up to that point, so I helped to cheer her up. Previously, I met Steve at the Flag Day Parade on June 10th, 2016 here in Hudson. And prior to that, we had communicated via email because he displayed some of my weather seasonally related photos I would email into him, as he does for many of the viewers. So kudos to Mr. Steve Kapp there, and hopefully we can have you on in the near future. And I'm still attempting for Mr. Robert O'Brien and the most adorable princess. They have had some health issues recently, and or maybe perhaps something came up looking after the horses or such. But he always, if he cannot make it last minute, he always has a more than explainable reason. So that aside, we may have Catherine and Armando. I would have to check in with them and
Let's
see if they're willing to do it last
them.
Minute. They were more aiming to do it for the coming on the next broadcast, but possibly they might be available briefly, but I don't want to cut into Mr. David's
Feel
time
free.
Here any longer. Because,
I want to hear what happened at the Chelsea Hotel.
Yes, and also there is an interview you can see with Mr. Linter on, you can type in Chelsea on the Rocks on YouTube.com and see when he was interviewed in 2008, not long after his episode there, which he's about to tell everyone, the listeners, about now. But his name will not come up in the interview, but you'll see he has a black beard and very kind of curly, wavy, wild black hair. And he's sitting in a chair with his one arm across the other and his leg crossed. So that's Chelsea on the Rocks, you can find on YouTube. And he will now tell us about the episode he experienced, which was a delayed reaction, per se, if I may put it, from a Vietnam experience. And then he'll also describe a bit about his movie, which he currently is going into production in Hollywood, which none of us can believe that is actually happening before our very eyes and ears, but
it's amazing.
It's like a dream come true anyway.
All right.
Go forward, my friend, please, brother.
Okie doke. I just want to mention one thing very important to me, that I'm sitting here next to a very unique cat, Garrett Roche, who I met. We hadn't been here, 3 weeks, I think, maybe. We were just getting used to being here, and we live on Warren, right? And we're looking around, and I'm thinking, hey, look at that place across the street. They got books. They got booze, you know. They got art supplies. You know, it's cool. So I went in one afternoon thinking I would do a little scribbling. And I'm sitting next to this guy actually using a pen and paper. And I said to myself, who's this freak? I got to know who this guy is. You know, I got to say something because, you know, I'm so excited to see somebody actually sitting there writing.
Hey, why blend in when you were born to stand out, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, to me, I mean, I can't quite do it the way I used to because of my injuries, but writing, when you're writing with a pen or a pencil, that's as close as you're going to get from the words going straight from your heart onto the page. It's very intimate. It's a whole different experience, not like typing, you know, which is fine. I always used to write all my drafts of everything I did handwritten first, and then I would translate it to the typewriter. And that was always my favorite part. And I see this guy doing it. And I'm like, hey, what are you doing? I wasn't exactly Mr. Friendly. I said, hey, what are you doing? He said, I'm writing a letter because I'm in this club. It's a pen pal club. That was it for me. I said, boy, I just met a cool guy.
There you go. So what happened down at the hotel?
Oh, the hotel story. Okay, look, this is it's meant to be an up story, because it is, ultimately. It was April, and it was a very, very hot day, and I was working out. You wouldn't know it looking at me now, but I used to be in pretty good shape. I was very fit. and I started to sweat very bizarrely. I mean, like, to the point where you go, what's going on? I was like, remember the movie Airplane with Abdul-Jabbar and the water's coming down like it's, you know, a waterfall? And I said, my God, something's wrong. So I walked over to my bed. I sat down on the edge of the bed. And I could hear. I could hear the sound of my brain burning down. It sounded like crackling tripe on a stove. And this is, I heard it. And I said, oh my God, I'm bleeding in my head, right? And I know what, and I know because I'm a boxing fan, I know what you do when a guy gets clocked. So I said to myself, ask yourself your name and see how your voice says it. So I asked myself, what's your name? Inside. And then outside, I went, you know, dude, I kind of slurred my name. And I said, oh, my goodness, I probably just had a stroke. What it had turned out to be was a piece of shrapnel that had been left where it was because it was in such a precarious place. And it had somehow, you know, over the years, things had probably just, you know, loosened up and it broke off and it sliced through one of my veins. And I, of course, you know, I have no idea what's going on. So all I can think of at that point, knowing what's really important, was my vanity. I said, geez, I hope my mouth's not crooked. So I get up and I go to the bathroom to look in the mirror. And I look in the mirror and my mouth looked okay to me at that point. At this, of course, I don't know. I'm in a state of aphasia, of course. I don't know what's going on. But I think I do. So I see myself and I say, no big deal. Let's just go sit down. I'll smoke a joint. I'll relax. Kick back. It'll be fine. You'll be fine. Well, I never made it to the bed. I got about 10 feet from the bed and down I went. And the way I went down was not like a tree going down. It's like, you know how when they blow those buildings up and they come down in like stages? It was that. That's what it felt like. You know, it's like my body just fell in stages and pieces until I was on the ground. And then I was really in a pickle because I was like, oh, man, am I going to die like this? What a dingy way to die. I'm looking at the ugly, dirty carpet, and I'm thinking, damn, I got to come up with a good story here. These are the crazy things that probably kept me going. I was there for 3 days before anybody found me. Now, that wasn't unusual because I would often, you know, cut everybody off when I was writing. But when my mailbox got full, people started to get nervous because I always call everybody back. But I don't know how the time at this point. You know, I'm in a complete state. I don't even know this. So did it occur to me once to dial 911? No. I got to call a friend in Paris with 4,000 numbers. So I'm sitting there and I'm dialing this over and over and over. I mean, I could have done it 500 times for all I know. And I keep thinking, why do I keep getting it wrong? But not once did I think dial 911. I mean, this shows you how disoriented. I mean, I just had no idea how out of it I was. And I didn't even realize that my left leg no longer was working and that my left arm was gone. In fact, I saw this left arm over my head, right? I'm thinking maybe somebody, you know, clocked me. I opened the door and somebody, you know, tried to break in and I got in a fight or whatever, which would not have been all that unusual. And I thought to myself, gee, I wonder whose arm that is. And then I said to myself, I got tattoos on my arm. Let me see if they're mine. And I picked up my arm and I looked at it and I said, oh, shoot. Dang. That's my arm. And then it was like, holy moly. You know, how do I get up? You know, so for God knows how long, I tried to stand up. I got 6 Cokes in the fridge. I am so dehydrated, right? I'm humiliated because, you know, I'm afraid that I'm going to stain myself, right? Thinking that I'm going to be found, you know, in my own waste. And what a way to go. I mean, come on, I said, I got to do better than that. So I used the garbage can. I was able to pull it over to take a leak, right? So I took care of that one. And the other one, thank God, didn't happen. But all I kept doing was thinking, I got to come up with a better story. This story stinks. It's boring. So for days, I kept making up stories. Okay, this guy knocked on the door. You guys wouldn't believe what happened. So I'm making up stories, and I'm laughing at myself, thinking, what a ridiculous way to die, you idiot. You had so many cool ways to go before. And I'm like, I'm really beating myself up a little bit. Come on, dude, you got to come up with a better story. This one stinks. So that kept me going. Interestingly enough, my imagination and my ability to tell a story helped save my life right there. And luckily, at that point, my friends went into action and came to the hotel and demanded they open the door. And they opened the door and they found me. I was rushed to St. Vinny's Hospital, where I had brain surgery immediately. And whoever that on-call brain surgeon was saved my life. I mean, I got the scars from it, but...
Here you are.
Here I am.
On the Monday afternoon show.
Exactly.
Of all things.
I mean, it's remarkable. It's truly.
You're meant to stick around a little bit more. I guess that's the way it worked.
Yeah.
A product of bewilderment, I'll tell you.
And maybe you were meant to make a movie, too.
Among other things. So, I got a great novel in me, and it's there. And
I bet you do. Tell us about the movie.
The one that's about to go into production, yes.
Sure.
I had a film that was made that I worked on called Dancing at the Blue Iguana. Which, it's not the greatest movie ever made, but it's a nice piece of work. It's been a huge hit on cable around the world. And IFC called it one of the dozen best cult films ever. And which was a real, honor for me. It was the first, big deal I ever worked on. And I got to work with a great director and some bunch of really wonderful actors and actresses. And that movie actually made it to the theaters. Nobody made any money except for the guy that was dumb enough to put up the money to make the movie. He deserved to get it, to have the guts to let us do what we did. We winged it. Everything was ad-libbed. We created characters on the fly in rehearsal. And we let the actors go with it. If you find something, go. Mike was brilliant. And most of these actors will tell you they gave their best performances. Daryl, Hannah, all my friends who say, hey, I saw your movie. It was great. They didn't say a word about me. Oh, I saw Daryl, Hannah nude. That's all they cared about. I said, that's okay, fine. How'd you like my work? Huh? What?
Clan of the Cave Bear strikes
exactly.
back in the Blue Iguana.
No,
good
I mean,
stuff.
It shows up all the time on HBO.
Yeah.
They love it. A late night film.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And if anybody ever runs into it, I'm telling you, you could do worse. It's
there
a nice
go.
Piece of work and some... tremendous acting, because these actors were really out on a limb. That we pushed them as far as we could push them,
cool.
so that there was nothing left for them to do but seize the day.
Good stuff. And so you're working on another one right now, and it's going to hopefully be going into production soon.
Right. It's just, I say it's basically in pre-production.
And it's about what?
This is about a fellow who's become quite a good friend of mine. Who at one time was a legendary, still legendary, but he was a terribly feared gangbanger in East L.A. I mean, this guy was major dude. And, you know, with all the, I mean, prison tattoos, like, you can't even believe. So I had a friend who said, you two guys got to meet each other. You're going to love each other. And, of course, we did. And, you know, people had been asking for years to write his story. Because it's one of those good ones that ends up, you know, with a good ending. You know, he turned his life around. He did time. He did all that. And he came back and gave back in spades to his community and all that stuff. So, you know, it was an upbeat film, really, with a lot of crazy stuff in the in-between. In fact, he's the guy that invented what is now, which was then, became common. He'd bring the cocaine in from Mexico on his surfboard, tape it underneath his surfboard, and he'd surf it in. That's how he sold the cartel that he was introduced to do it. He told them, I got this idea, and they were like, whoa, let's give it a try. Next thing you know, he's 15 years old. He's, you know, he's carrying around thousands of dollars in his pocket. You know, he did it all. Did the drugs, did the drinking, the girls, the whole schmear. But you know what he told me in the end, he was addicted to the money. He said it was incredible. You know, he said, I would come home and I would throw it on the bed, and it was just thousands of dollars. He said, and I'm a punk. I'm a little guy. I'm a 15, 16. I'm driving around this pimped up, you know, God knows what. And he became he really also made his reputation as he was rehabilitating himself as a guy who, you know, could make custom bikes and cars. I told him, I want one of those cars that bounces up and down. I said, that's the one for me.
Yeah.
Imagine that. I said, I want to stop at a stoplight in L.A. and bounce up and down.
Maybe Snoop Doggy Dogg will be in the next car over. You guys just start bouncing over. Good stuff. Wow. Well, this sounds absolutely fascinating. David Linter, I want to thank you so much for coming and sharing with us. This
well,
has been fantastic.
Thank you for having me, man.
Yeah, this is good. We'll have to do it again. Garrett, thanks for bringing David in. We'll have to get back to Princess O'Brien another time, it sounds like.
Definitely. They have had a few health issues, as I say, and something, unfortunately, is delaying them, but I'm almost positive they'll be on the next time, and they, who knows, it could even be a phone signal issue over there. Next time,
we'll get him to
Robert's
call
hoping
next
to come
Monday.
Over again in the next month or two, so he at least may be in person. And
let's get him on again.
We'll work that out. Oh, and Armando just texted me. He said he'd like to come on.
Okay. We may have another caller. I'm supposed to have a caller calling in from Boston pretty soon, but let's put Armando on.
And just a quick shout out to Severa Smith and her younger sister, Jocelyn Drabsik, down in Severa's in Hagerstown, and her sister Jocelyn still resides with their mom and dad in Walkersville. They were here during Mother's Day weekend. They drove all the way up. They stayed with me. We were pen pals since 2011, and they were the first time we met in person. Severa was on a previous broadcast. I believe it may have been
January 27.
She
called in from Hagerstown. So can we get this guy on your line? I'm going to play a song for you right now, Garrett. And then we're going to get your caller on the line, and we're going to say goodbye to David. David,
thank you so much,
Karen, really appreciate it.
Much.
This was awesome.
And
Carrie,
me,
thanks for coming in, sitting
relaxed
in the studio. Really appreciate that. Armando, we got a caller calling in, I think, from Corpus Christi, Texas. That might be the connection there. We're going to go. We'll tell you what. We're going to find out in 1 second. Garrett, you want to give a little more introduction to your guest here?
Mr. Armando Camina, who has since become a friend of my dear friend, Ms. Catherine Ayers, who's now in Poughkeepsie, New York. And Armando has a gratitude project going, which is very similar along the lines of the Positivity Group. So we're collaborating. He has been on a previous broadcast with Ms. Ayers and myself. And you, Kieran. And
that's right. Armando, can you hear us okay with the line? We're just
going to
check right here. Can you hear us okay?
I can't. Garrett is kind of moving in and out, but I can hear you okay.
Okay, so how's it going, Armando? Where are you calling from, and what you got for us?
Well, I'm calling from San Antonio, Texas, and deep in the heart of Texas, I guess you can say, and it's hot down here today. It's like 100 degrees, but and it's only May, so it's going to be a hot summer here. But what I do have is what Garrett and Catherine, I think you know Catherine as well, but what we've been talking about and what we feel that we're in unison with, and that is gratitude and positivity, because that is something that we all need, and we all need to share in some way. Do you agree?
Amen to that. Absolutely. And thanks for sharing that bit of it. And so how are we going to keep that vibe going in the face of everything that's going on right now?
Well, I think that to keep that vibe going, it's up to each of us. I mean, each of your listeners and their friends and so forth. It all starts with one person. It all starts within what's in your heart, because everything that we have is right there within us. We don't have to go searching for it, just inside. But if we can do that one by one, we'll make change and we'll continue to make change. It may be small in the beginning, but the seed grows, and we just got to keep the seed moving, move it along. I guess is a saying they say in Texas a lot, move it along. And I think that as a human race, I think that's what we need to do as well.
I love it. I love it, Armando. So sorry that we have to like cut it short. We got another caller calling in from Boston in a minute here, but that is a wonderful message.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate being on the air, and let's keep gratitude and positivity moving forward.
Amen. Armando.
Thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care.
Bye. Whether it's my great-granddad from County Kerry, Ireland, or Mr. Linter here of Hudson, New York, we all need to come together as citizens instead of waiting for someone to do something for us in power. And through the centuries, you can see there's this entity that moves in, and they always use money and power combination. And they, you know, their enemy is positivity, really. If they see people coming together, singing and dancing and laughing like true human beings, they're going to say, uh-oh, we're not going to have any more power, you know? So that's the whole point of it. It just comes down so simply to people just coming together and enjoying life, and without this black cloud over everything.
On that note, Garrett, thank you so much. I appreciate it. We got another caller calling in from Boston right now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Much more than appreciated, Karen. You went above and beyond.